Hello, and welcome to Accent of Women, a show by and about women from diverse cultures and languages right across the world. I'm Nida. On today's show, we'll be listening to the third and final part of the recording of the Pan-African Women's Day seminar convened by the All African People's Revolutionary Party and which was held in March of this year. The theme for the seminar is A Pan-Africanist Feminist Tribute, Honoring African Women Resisting Imperialism, Settler Colonialism, Neocolonialism, National and Women's Oppression, and Zionism. Have a listen.
And so just for folks who have not been here from the beginning, we have started with a conversation about, one, the place and the role and struggle of women, African women, and our struggles for liberation as Pan-Africanists, as Palestinians, as Venezuelans, as Haitians, as people who are fighting against the structures of power that and oppression and domination that come under slavery, imperialism, colonialism, neocolonialism. And in particular, we were having a conversation about. Yes, I will share the name of the documentary. In particular, we were having a conversation about in what ways do the particularities of women's struggles come up for our speakers in their organizations, but also in a sort of broader conversation, we were trying to talk about if at all it is worth it to struggle over definitions and understandings of terms like feminism. Which each of our respective speakers have had, I think, differing but related takes on. And so I just wanted to kind of recap some of those things. Again, I would like to invite some of our other speakers. Naya, I think, also is added to the chat. Women have to make a new turn and forget about the past because it hurts. When we think of where we came from, especially those of you abroad, let's look for the root causes of these violences. And if as we are continuing, I've mentioned that we wanted this to be more conversational rather than a panel discussion, as we've sort of typically put forward. So I'm also inviting any of our speakers, if they have further contributions that they want to make at this moment, they are welcome to do so. If nobody is chomping at the bit, I will also just share another one of our speaker videos.
Good afternoon, Africans. I am so disappointed that I cannot be with you virtually via Zoom, that I must pre-record these remarks, but I am so honored to be involved in the 2025 Pan-African Women's Day Seminar. Especially because this is a very important theme, a Pan-Africanist feminist tribute, honoring African women resisting imperialism, settler colonialism, neocolonialism, national and women's oppression, and Zionism. And as we all know, this is such an important topic right now, given that U.S. imperialism is in free fall, and so it is becoming or sort of reproducing itself as especially vicious, especially violent, and especially hostile to African people, not only in the United States, but throughout the African diaspora. We know the Zionists are showing their true colors. They have dropped any pretense of democracy and being civilizers and are completely showing their savagery and barbarism. And of course, African folks have been at the forefront alongside our Palestinian and Arab and Muslim comrades in struggling against Zionism and fighting for a free and liberated Palestine. And these struggles are nothing new. And of course, women of African descent on the African continent, in the African diaspora, have always been central to these struggles against these structures of domination. And so I just briefly want to lift up one of my favorite African women who was a consummate anti-imperialist who also centered the realities of African women, and that is Claudia Jones. Claudia Jones understood that, as Karl Marx argued, theory becomes a material force as soon as it's gripped by the masses. And this is precisely what Claudia Jones's praxis entailed. It entailed organizing the masses and challenging imperialism, white supremacy, colonialism, capitalism, and of course, neocolonialism. And so Claudia Jones, one of her theoretical or fundamental theoretical contributions came from the way that she explicated the co-constitutive nature of race, sex, and working class oppression. And she called this triple oppression and really understood how it was manifested in the concentration of Black women in unskilled, primarily domestic service, the social, political, and economic marginalization of Black women because of their position at the bottom of society, and the ways that the left radical form of organizing was completely undermined because it excluded, intended to not take seriously Black women and their tremendous contributions to the proletarian anti-imperialist struggle. She understood that because she was African, her and women like her were overrepresented in the labor market, confined to the lowest paying jobs, and excluded from all but the most menial fields of work, as well as earning extremely low wages. Her being a woman made her particularly suited for this type of like reproductive labor. And of course, being a worker meant that she was exploited worse than all. And this applied to, again, Black women, African women, not only who were in the United States, but throughout the African diaspora. And Claudia Jones was keen to connect up the struggles of women in the United States to struggles of women abroad. And this was also the foundation of her belief in peace and her dedication of herself to peace and pe not pacifism, but radical, what we call radical Black peace activism. So she understood that war went hand in hand with imperialism, and both went hand in hand with the subjection of people of African descent and oppressed people wherever they were located. And so there's so much more to say about Claudia Jones. She was of Trinidadian origin, but grew up in the United States, then was deported to Great Britain. So she is a quintessential sort of African diasporic subject. But she is unique in that she understood that African women were central to any global struggle, any national struggle, any serious struggle against the interlocking structures of domination that continue to plague us today. So, throughout this seminar, I am sure there are many, many more African women who will be lifted up. And then there are African women themselves who will be speaking powerfully about why it is that we need to be mindful of and serious about the ways that African women are central to this fight, and they always have been and will always be. So thank you for listening to these perhaps disjointed remarks, but I hope this is a wonderful gathering, and I look forward to participating in the future.
What does it look like to take seriously the need to have a gendered analysis, whether that be a feminist analysis, whether that be a womanist analysis, whether that be one that acknowledges that women experience a triple oppression on the basis of their race, their gender, their class, and other axes of oppression? What does it look like for us in our organizations, in our sort of daily lives, to take those issues seriously? I see Camille's hand.
Yeah. So the thing is, all oppression stems from a central point. And at the moment, that point is capitalism. Prior to capitalism, it was feudalism, colonialism. But all of it stems from capitalism, white supremacy, patriarchy, imperialism, wealth inequality, ecological warfare and injustice, you name it, it all stems from capitalism. When we look at the nations that have had successful revolutions, when we look at Venezuela, when we look at Nicaragua, when we look at Cuba, we see that once those people gained their liberation, the first things that they started in on were the very issues that we are talking about that affect women. But it is impossible to remedy patriarchy and the pains and the effects of patriarchy. It is impossible to have ecological justice. It is impossible to have human rights. It is impossible to have any kind of justice as long as we are laboring under the burden of capitalist oppression. And so, and unless and until we resolve that primary contradiction, it will be extremely difficult to deal with these others. Capitalism requires women to work twice as hard as men because somebody's got to run the house and the family, right? And so any kind of equity in terms of people's input, gendered input to the running of the family, has to come out of a concept, a conceptualization of equality. But you can't have equality with capitalism that says what your value is rooted in how much you are producing. And it is to our advantage to have women to produce free labor, to have women carrying out free labor. Okay, so first, the revolution has to include a conceptualization of these things, an understanding of these things, an intention to do away with these things. But until we have had that revolution, we are not going to be able to do away with those other issues.
Absolutely. I see that one of our sisters in the chat also, well, I'm sorry, I'm assuming, has said to take seriously self and community defense, that is first ideological, then material. And so and in thinking about this, Camille, your contribution, saying that obviously capitalism as an economic system necessitates a kind of exploitation that by design only benefits, if we want to use that term, a few. And who it benefits are not the people who are putting the most labor, effort, and work into those systems. And so again, I think us trying to sort of streamline this conversation and have a very sort of clear understanding of what it means to say that, okay, women, by virtue of capitalism, black African women experience particular kinds of oppression and domination because of the existence of these systems of capitalism, colonialism, Zionism, racism, neocolonialism. But then also, I think, returning to some of the points that Sister Naya raised, that we are also experiencing those within our as a product of what colonialism, racism, sexism, colonialism, sex, colonialism, Zionism, neocolonialism, capitalism, slavery has done to our communities. We are also experiencing those dynamics internally. And so with and in relationship to African men inside of our communities. And so I think, I wonder if we might also just have that conversation, because I understand, I think, Izili's point about gender not being necessarily central to the analysis, but also acknowledging that there are particular ways that both internally in our communities and with our communities in relationship to the broader societies that are oppressing us, that there is something particular about the way women are experiencing racism, colonialism, neocolonialism, and Zionism as well. And so again, I want to just put that question out there again. What particular, okay, so I'll ask this, I'll ask it a different way. So the fourth question that we were going to raise to the panelists is, at the fifth Pan-African Congress, at the fifth Pan-African Congress, Kwame Nkrumah put forth a definition of Pan-Africanism that was adopted by the Congress. It it defines Pan-Africanism as the total liberation and unification of Africa under scientific socialism. Do you believe that a feminist and/or gendered analysis of the Pan-African struggle is necessary in order to achieve our ultimate goals of a united and or socialist Africa, if that is a, you know, that is a goal for us as Pan-Africanists in the party, but also in terms of the sort of ultimate goal of our liberation as African people? What does it mean to take up, is a gendered analysis necessary, and what does that look like? I'm happy to hear. And I believe that Camille has already kind of offered a preliminary answer to that, but I'm also happy. I saw you raise your hand briefly, so you're welcome to add to that, Camille.
Very simply, how are you going to have any kind of progress while you're ignoring the existence, not to mention the plight, of greater than 50% of your population the existence and the struggles of those who create life, the existence and the struggles of those who sit at the base of our culture, of our progress, of our knowledge, of our wisdom, of our strength. So obviously, you cannot ignore the particular needs of women. It's also very important to understand, and there have been countless people whose analyses have explained this. The first person that I read on the subject was Frantz Fanon. In his book, The Wretched of the Earth, he made it clear that it is necessary in an oppressive system for the oppressed people to take on the role of oppressors. Otherwise, the oppression doesn't happen. And so what we see is our people, and it is not just men. Our sister from Cameroon pointed that out. It's not just men doing the oppression. Women perpetuate that oppression in our own culture, in our own behavior, in our own relationships. And so that, you know, it is very important to understand that that is all rooted in our oppression and that we must overcome the oppression. But in the process of doing that, if women aren't fundamental to the revolution, then the revolution ain't happening.
I think that's well said. I see that Nuhad also has her hand raised.
Yeah, so speaking to this question, gendered feminist analysis is absolutely necessary because it's through this analysis that women are able to negotiate their roles in resistance and in struggle. And to kind of touch on this, I want to speak about the Zionist tactic of what Palestinians call iskat. It's basically how the occupation exploits Palestinian notions of honor to recruit collaborators and sow paranoia of women activists in Palestine spaces internally. The most common tactics of this is usually either recruiting a female collaborator recruiting a female collaborator, often within like hair salons in Palestine, then drugging a woman while she is incapacitated. Palestinian male collaborators will take pictures of her in compromising positions, will use sexual violence, take evidence of it, and use it as blackmail to coerce the Palestinian woman to collaborate with the occupation for information. And it's led to the arrest, expulsion, and assassination of many Palestinians within the struggle. And because of this, predominantly male Palestinian leadership have often employed kind of reactionary responses of like strict cultures of modesty, and you know have employed violence against Palestinian women in order to kind of get them to submit to these policies, and you know. In actual, like, and this is a major contradiction here because, you know, there, how can we define a woman's role in the liberation movement by confining her to what her role under occupation is? And it is through gendered and feminist analysis that Palestinian women have been able to kind of take back their agency while also able to counteract the occupation's tactics. So in response to Iskat, Palestinian women devised culturally grounded measures that could ensure their reputations as Palestinian activists, as women, remained intact, and guaranteeing their freedom of movement and activism. And this is something as simple as just telling other Palestinian women, do not accept open drinks from like hair salons. Even if you go to visit your brother, do not accept an open drink. Like, and it's these very simple things that don't infringe upon a woman's freedom of movement, but also allow her to kind of, you know, reclaim her agency within an incredibly violent occupation. And, you know, and this is also the step to where we can kind of begin to deconstruct these constructs of kind of like gendered oppression that we recreate within our internal communities, you know, and this is often something that we at least within like the Palestine sphere, because Islamophobia is so globally pervasive and villainized by the West to justify its crimes in our homelands, there's this defensiveness we have because the enemy will always weaponize these contradictions within our spaces to A, justify itself, and B, to sow division within our movements. And so the solution to this is a collective internal unlearning and dismantling of these colonial constructs. And a very, and I think the best way for us to unlearn this is through reframing these oppressions as reproductions of our primary enemy, of Zionism, of imperialism, of colonialism, because that's always what it comes back to. You know, we reject any framing of feminism that attempts to position Palestinian men as our primary oppressors. No, they are our brothers, and they are as much victims of patriarchy as we are, because the occupation also employs sexual violence against Palestinian men to reinforce itself. So, you know, we have to kind of recognize these nuances and these and the just the experiences within our community so that we can build our collective power, you know, and also heal from the violence that the occupation has coerced us into committing against each other. So, yeah.
No, thank you for that. I think, you know, that it's also it's really important to think about what are the existing contradictions and trigger points inside of our community that are so easily exploited by our enemies, right? And so one being some of these pre-existing patriarchal notions about women's either modesty or lack thereof, freedom of movement, lack thereof, in our sister Naya's sort of retelling these kind of what do you call it, basic assumptions about you know, whether or not it is useful for women to go to school or not, or girl children to go to school, what happens in these sort of marital relations, who bears the burden of the responsibility of work both inside and outside of the home. And I know up until this point we haven't had a very robust conversation about sexuality, but I know that pink washing occurs similarly within both, particularly in Palestinian struggles, because of some of the assumptions about Islam's relationship to homosexuality, but also I think in our Black African communities as well. And so one of the things that also occurs is that because there are some I don't even want to make a overarching claim about any kind of like particular homophobia among Black or Palestinian or African communities, but because those tendencies do exist because they exist in the larger society, then what happens is members of our communities who might otherwise be comrades, be, you know, people who we struggle with, are baited, are put in positions where they are blackmailed by our actual enemies, and that is used against them, and they are then used against us. And so then again, as we have these conversations about what does it mean to have a sort of principled position, a principled gender analysis, which also takes into account some of these other ways of being in the world, like how do we take them seriously such that we are not creating additional sort of fodder for enemies, you know, for our enemies to use against us because we are leaving certain sections of our communities vulnerable in ways that leave them susceptible to that kind of that kind of betrayal to our struggles for our liberation, for our freedom. I know that's just sort of me responding, but if people have ideas or thoughts, I would like for us to continue to be in conversation with each other.
I just wanted to say, in reference to your last statement, none of us are free unless all of us are free.
Absolutely. Which also means that, like, and I think that a part of this conversation that we're trying to have is that I think many of us will make those kinds of declarative statements, and I think believe them. But also, what does that actually look like in practice for us in our organizations and in our communities that allow people to believe that we believe these things that we are saying, right? That make a that have that that allow us to understand that there are particular ways that even as African women, as we have consistently struggled, we have consistently participated in our own struggles for liberation from the beginning of time, that there are also ways that that has been made difficult by external and internal structures. And how do we both be true to that, account for that, and not treat our brothers necessarily as our enemies, but as people that we do have particular issues to struggle with and over inside of our communities, right? These are not necessarily struggles for other people to intervene in, but they are real struggles that impact how our organizations exist. I know, for instance, for us, right? So the All African People's Revolutionary Party is the party that was called for by Kwame Nkrumah to exist, but in the Handbook of Revolutionary Warfare. But the All African Women's Revolutionary Union was formed in 1980. The All African Women's Revolutionary Union was formed not as many other women's organizations had been formed at the time as something that was outside of the party, but was as an internal organizational structure within the party. That said, okay, there are particular issues that women are concerned with who are committed to the struggle for our liberation, and that we don't necessarily want to create an organization that splits with our brothers. We want to have an entity that exists in relationship to our already existing organization in order to be able to struggle over issues like, in what ways are women's issues being represented on the Central Committee? In what ways are women being overly taxed and burdened with issues of childcare and reproductive labor inside of the organization in ways that men are not? And so, again, this question about a gendered analysis about the role that women play, I think is a central one that I think needs more than just lip service, that we actually have to have sort of tangible evidence of what are the ways we are paying attention to these issues, and how are we tackling them within our own organizations, and to bolster our struggles for freedom and liberation with the struggles that women that are particular to women.
And that's all we've got time for today. We just heard the third and final part of the recording of the Pan-African Women's Day seminar convened by the All African People's Revolutionary Party. The first and second parts of the seminar can be found on 3CR's website, 3cr.org.au, at the Accent of Women page. Accent of Women is produced in the Melbourne studios of Community Radio 3CR with the financial assistance of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. The show is distributed nationally via the Community Radio Network, with special thanks to the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia. Music for Accent of Women was written and produced by George Kanjura. Thanks for tuning into the program. I'm Nita, and we look forward to your company again next week.